just when you thought it was safe to take down your jack-o'-lantern, the spooky season returns. But not just any spookum, a genre-defining one. Because two horror fans, and the occasional special guest, refuse to let evil die tonight. Welcome to the Apocalypse Video Halloween Retrospective. I am your slightly less creepy narrator, David Snyder. On tonight's episode, we return to Rob Zombie's Haddonfield, where we get a front row seat inside the mind of Michael Myers. A mind filled with white horses, flashbacks, and more David Lynchian imagery than an episode of Twin Peaks. It's Halloween 2 again.
I killed him.
Who'd you kill, sweetie? Who'd you kill?
Welcome to the final installment of the Rob Zombie version of Halloween here on the Apocalypse Video Halloween Retrospective. I'm your host and successful book author, Dave. I really botched that intro. I was trying to make a reference to the movie and failed miserably. I'm also joined by my fellow more successful authors, Nicholas Immortenhove.
Black is still not a color, Dave. No matter how many movies you make, it will always remain the absence of color.
Whereas white is all colors in the color spectrum. You could say that by me telling this to a young Michael Myers, a young psychotic child, that I gave him the inspiration for the Michael Myers mask. So honestly, I should probably be getting those residuals. We're also joined by Ryan, returning to complete the Rob Zombie saga.
Jason, my special little boy. I mean, Michael, my special little boy.
That is so right. Anyone who's familiar with Friday the 13th cannot watch this movie and tell me this isn't just Jason.
Yeah,
right?
but no, I'm not. That's not to paint my picture, but that was definitely going through my head quite a bit.
though.
I was definitely, well, the fact that he's like 7 feet tall, he, like someone bashes him with a bat and he just sort of stumbles a little bit. You know what I mean? He doesn't like fly over. Like, he is full on Jason in this movie.
Yeah, he combined a couple things.
He's Jason with Hagrid from Harry Potter.
Yes, one of my favorite things to this movie is the fact that you see his beard coming out from below the mask.
He's got a line. Remember that line where he says, like, "You're a Myers, Laurie."
That's good.
Well, we're talking about Halloween 2 again, or as Ryan would call it, Halloween 2.2.
Is it, no, 2-2.
2-2.
Yeah, 2-2. I usually call it like 2-2. 2-2-3, you know. What are you gonna...
Halloween 2-2. Rob Zombie's Halloween 2-2. And so if you listen to the previous episode, it sounded like out of the three of us, Nick was the one that was the most favorable to Rob Zombie's Halloween. Is that fair, Nick?
So?
Like, Ryan and I weren't really about it.
But I think we came in a little better than we did originally seeing it. In my opinion.
Yeah, yeah. I think it wasn't a miserable experience watching it, but I still do not care for that movie. So going into this one, my only experience was having seen it on DVD via Netflix mail subscription years ago when it came out on DVD, like in, I don't know, 2009, 2010. I remember at the time hating it. I felt like it was a waste of time. It stole my time, and I never thought about it again until this viewing, like, you know, years later. And I gotta say, I was wrong. Believe it or not, I think Rob Zombie's Halloween 2 is an okay movie. God help me.
Yeah.
I was surprised.
I mean, I don't know. I think this movie is doing a lot. And so I have no experience of it. Ryan, have you seen it before?
I never saw it because I didn't like the first one really. Like, I was like, I don't want to go there again. At all.
I don't want to go to that world again.
Because I'm pretty sure we saw the first one in theaters and we're all just like, ugh. And then we're like, let's skip this one. And I think they always came out in August or something. And it was always like a weird time. We weren't quite ready for. Now spooky season goes like 3 months. But I think back in 2009, we were waiting till October. But I didn't have interest in seeing it at the time.
I think I've never seen it. And I think we talked about like our Rob Zombie impressions earlier in the last movie, but I really think that I don't think the like my rating or anything on the first movie has changed, but I do think that this movie benefits a lot from the first one. Like, it really does a lot of good work building on the stuff that it did in the first one, which kind of like I said, I don't want to say it like makes the first one better, but it reinforces its value, I think, to me. So I did a bit of reading about Halloween 2 because from my experience before seeing this movie, Halloween 2, Rob Zombie's Halloween 2, has been on my radar actually quite a bit because it's been so well regarded a lot among a lot of people that I pay attention to.
Yeah, reevaluated, so whatever.
So I've been interested. I'm like, okay, what is this all about? You know, and then after now that I've seen it and reading all this stuff, this movie, its core strength is trauma and empathy, I think. And so the reason I bring it up now is because that trauma and empathy is specifically related to the two halves of the first movie. Like, without Laurie shooting Michael the way she does at the end, which is the culmination of the remake part, you couldn't have this second movie. Like, so it's almost like I said, like, I think to me, it just reinforces the necessity and the value of that remake part that, you know, I think we all kind of like shrugged at a little bit.
Well, this movie, yeah, it does sort of make the first movie a little better, at least in your memory, because what I like about this movie is, even though it sounds like Rob Zombie had a miserable time making this movie, even more so than the first movie, like, he really clashed with the Weinsteins. There's a lot of problems on set. He suspected people of stealing money from the set, even. Like, it was a wild time making this movie, apparently. What I appreciate about this one is it's clearly, well, I'm about to say it's clearly its own thing, but as we stated earlier, it is clearly taking a lot from Friday the 13th, I think, in terms of what they do with Michael Myers. But that aside, one thing that caught me off guard with this movie was, like, I'm actually able to get behind some of the characters because it stays with these characters from beginning to end. I'm not introduced to them over an hour into a 2-hour movie. It's like I appreciated that I was able to get behind these characters, and it made like sort of a weird like kind of effect with Halloween 1 where I'm like, I know that wasn't a good movie, but it's like it does serve as a base for this movie. So it's weird that I don't know. It's like a weird disassociative thing that I'm having with Halloween 1 watching Halloween 2, because as you said, this movie doesn't exist without the first movie, and the first movie is like this weird uneven thing. But like that said, I felt like I had the basis of going into this movie to be behind the characters. I guess it's almost like shorthand. Like someone gave me the Cliff Notes version of Laurie Strode from the first movie. That's what the first movie is a Cliff Notes version. Then I'm like, okay, now I'm ready for my assignment for Halloween 2. And I don't know. I enjoyed this movie. God help me.
I don't know why you're so like, feel like it's controversial or something like that. Like, I think this is very clearly at least a good movie to me. But I think like the shorthand of my argument for why the first value is reinforced is because I think it's reductive to say it's the Cliff Notes, but the whole relationship between Annie and Laurie is introduced and established, and the assault and trauma that they go through, we actually do witness. So when we fast forward 2 years in the second one to being with them, we actually already have all that trauma built, carried through, and we know about it. So we've not only seen like the traumatic dream sequence in the beginning, but we also have the kind of this, I guess I would call it like a cinematic memory almost of the trauma that came before. And it makes, and the reason, spoilers, fast forward, when Annie dies, like that's masterclass cinema to me.
I actually felt it because I'm like, oh, this is a character I've been with the entire movie.
I almost cried when I think the palpability of that is reinforced by the first movie is all I'm trying to say. Like that, I think there's a level, like if you had not seen the first movie and you watched this movie, I don't think it would hit as hard. I think it would still hit because I think, like I said, I think that's the sequencing, the editing, the inclusion of the home video footage is like, that's brilliance to me. So I think that would hit. But I like I said, I think it just hits so much harder because we've been with the characters and we saw what they went through, which was still a brutal experience. Like, even if it was a beat for repeat remake, like the violence in the Rob Zombie films, which it was amplified in this movie.
Yeah, this one's way gorier and intense. Like there
it
are
sits
several
in it for a while too longer, I think. Like it sits in? It sits in its like that yeah. that shit even longer and in the trauma of it of where like I flash to like Dan, is it Roadbuck? Roadbruck? What's that actor's name?
Daniel Roebuck.
Daniel Roebuck. Like his arm flopping around, he's running around. Like that's not in any other Michael Myers movie, you know? Like, or that's not in any, they skip that part in these movies usually, you know? Of the person like fucking flopping around. Like,
Well, there are several scenes where Michael, this happens more than once, where he stabs someone and just keeps stabbing them like that. Like it goes on for a prolonged period of time and it's gnarly. Like to speak of prolonged death in this movie, in the beginning, one thing that stood out for me was like when the ambulance, this is all later revealed to be a dream sequence, we find out, but the ambulance like tips over. You know, Michael Myers, they hit a cow.
Oh yeah.
Which when we were watching it, I think we all laughed. We're like, cow.
That was gnarly.
What's the difference between jam and jelly?
I don't know.
What? You can't jelly your cock up a dead girl's ass. You're like, cow.
What?
Cow. No!
Hits the cow. They're messed up. The driver's dead, and the other EMT guy is just like, it goes on forever of this guy like, it keeps going, and Michael Myers hasn't even woken up yet. And meanwhile, it's just this creepy guy. I think it's Joe Chill from Batman Begins. Like,
I knew what I'd done. I did some bad things. I'm sorry. I wouldn't do it again. I wouldn't kill Martha and Thomas Wayne again.
How do you have that whole thing? You have that, like some just random character in Batman Begins. Not even like a freaking the orange.
Who not
monologue.
Only knows the character's name, who he was, who played him, but he knows the line that the character said.
And I love Batman Begins. I'm just saying, like, I'm like, whoa, I don't know who, what the hell are you talking about?
Dave is like,
well,
a secret
just because
genius.
He's like, I know what I did. He just has one of those voices, and it's just exemplified in this scene when he's just like, eh. You know what I mean? Like, he's just like constantly like, hey, help me, damn it. I'm dying over here. I would just shook me how long this sequence went on for. I think I looked over at Nick for a second and sort of chuckled like, this just keeps going, doesn't it?
It sits in it.
It's just one shot on this guy. I don't think it even cuts. It's just him like, wah! And you're not even really sure what's happening. Like, is there something like lodged in the back of his throat or something? Like, what's happening? Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm sorry. I went off on Mr. Joe Chill. Nick, you were about to say something.
No, I think you were talking about the violence, and I think the violence in this movie has been amplified, I feel like, and it's also... the word I would use is unflattering, because the kills in this movie are extremely brutal. They're not
head stomps.
They're not really fun to watch. they make you feel bad. Mm-hmm. And all that really, I think, adds to the gravity of the movie. I think that's the thing that this movie has. It's more than just like a self-seriousness to it. It's a gravity where it's like the death actually means something.
Yeah, that's a good point. Like it, for some reason, the self-seriousness in that first one doesn't work for me, and this one is like a brutal, like holy shit kind of thing.
Yeah,
and
agreed.
Like, there's a lot to do with like the scenes in this movie, like the crime scenes are like, I feel like shown, like there's a lot of detail. I don't know, I think this movie looks a lot better as it's.
Oh, definitely.
I love that bleach bypass kind of like, you know, that Spielberg sort of 2000s era look that they're kind of doing, because I think it must be, it's either early.
There's something that I read about the change from the way the movies look from the first one to the second one, and it seems like the first one was, I'm going to get the measurements mixed up, but one of them is 16 millimeter and one of them is 32 millimeter, and then the second one, if you notice, is all like the color scheme is like gray basically.
Mm-hmm.
And what that does is it's a visualization of the trauma that's been inflicted on Haddonfield, because that's another diversion from the, I think, the previous series and Rob Zombie's incarnation, is that the whole town really actually is affected. Like, I think Dave and I joked about this a lot, is like Haddonfield is like celebrating Halloween all the time. Like, they don't care.
Yeah.
Or Halloween town. Like, yeah.
People are dressing up as Michael Myers. It's just like, but in this movie, it's actually like, it's like a school shooting or something like that. Like, you know, it's like the whole town actually is like, oh my God, like this happened. Like, this is a real sensitive subject.
Yeah.
And everything, and the whole essence of this town basically has been transformed through just the cinematography.
Yeah.
I'm really looking forward to your thoughts on the David Gordon Green Halloweens, the Halloween 1-1, the Halloween 2-3, the Halloween
3-3.
The Halloween 3-3.
No,
it'll be interesting to see your thoughts on those movies, given what you just said.
No, that was great. I mean, I love that, and it's a bleach bypass. I'm just looking at the cinematographer, and there was a lot of switches. And,
is that a term? Right?
Well, I think I'm guessing this was probably a film. It looked like it didn't look like early digital. So I think a term. I don't know exactly what it means, but I just know that's the look that's going for. Like think of like the movie like Minority Report, or like AI has that real like gray.
Yeah.
Like the lights are real bright. I think it's like an overexposure kind of thing.
Yeah, this one looked really good. No,
the editing was better too.
The editing was much better. Well, I was going to ask to that. Like, so I think once again, Ryan, we put you in an isolation booth. You watched the theatrical cut. Nick and I watched the director's cut. It sounds like the violence was more or less intact in both.
Well,
versions.
I mean, I'm sure there's things missing, but it wasn't violent. This movie was a lot better, and it feels like a movie where a guy made a movie and wanted to make something better. Like, he kind of was like, I learned something. It sounds like it was a hard experience, but it sounded like he was like, he learned from like things that didn't work, but what worked in the first one and kind of like played into it. And it's like, I always change the cinematography and get better editing and stuff. There is moments where I do feel like it's maybe doing a little bit of skip yada yadaing a little bit. So I'm wondering if that's part of the cut I got a little bit. And I do think the movie loses steam halfway through a little bit. For me, at least, it did.
Around what point? Like, what's happening when you're feeling like, okay, this movie lost me a bit?
Well, it's not really lost me. I was just kind of like ready for it to end, I think, you know, if that makes sense. And it was
Nick and I were saying there were two whole sequences that they could have, I think, completely cut out of the movie and it wouldn't have affected anything. Mm. One of which being the Daniel Roebuck scene you mentioned earlier. That whole sequence in the strip club was not connected to anything else in the movie.
Well, it was going back to his mom's hangout, you know?
I guess, but it's like he never went there to see his mom. It's just like we know that as the audience, but again, it didn't feel like it impacted anything. Mm. Like, he was already seeing his mom up to that point. I don't think it added anything, like, you know, seeing her walk down angelic down the runway. Like, I don't know, that could have been cut. And also the scene with at the Halloween party later, when one of Laurie's friends who she works with at the bookstore, coffee shop, whatever the hell that place was, it's not
that
really
is a weird
clear.
Place
I think it was a bookshop.
Her horny friend, she goes off and has sex with this guy, and she gets killed in a van. And again, it's not really connected to anything. It doesn't really come back.
Well, that feels like more like old school Halloween, like slasher
movie.
Well,
and that's, and ultimately, I think that's what Nick and I had said, where it's just like, that feels like something. It's like, you got to amp up the kills. You got to have more kills in the movie. But otherwise, like, if I were to cut this movie, I would probably remove at least one of those scenes to tighten things up. Because it just didn't impact anything. They don't find her later. In fact, they could have just kept the line in the movie as is, where they're leaving the party and they're like, hey, what happened to so-and-so? Yeah, she left with some guy. Boom, that's it. You don't need to see her again.
Yeah, that kill of the girl in the van is the most quote-unquote body count-esque kill.
Okay.
And to me, the reason that, like, it's borderline offensive, because it almost goes against the ethos that I was just talking about before, where it's like all the kills are meaningful and, you know, we need these kills and stuff like that, or they make sense. But this one, like, explicitly, like Dave just said, if they had the same exact line from that character, oh yeah, she went off with a guy, the movie still would have worked. Like, it was, and it doesn't even make sense to me why Michael would kill that girl, because she wasn't even with, like, yes, okay, is she, I guess you just say, oh, she's in the radius of Lori. She knows Lori, so she has to die. But other than that, like, it's, he didn't kill her to get to Lori, like, say the nurse in the hospital.
That makes sense. I see that.
So that kill in particular really bugs me, and I'm like, okay, just because, and again, it's just because the movie is so serious about itself. It's just like, okay, you're going to make every kill count. Everybody that dies has an identity and all this stuff. And it's just like, okay, you don't, it feels weird to say, but you didn't need to kill that person.
Well, and again, it's like, and then he just kills some slimy characters at the strip club. It's just like, oh, and speaking of brutalness again, that lady there who's completely naked throughout this whole scene, who he repeatedly bashes her face into that glass forever. That was so gnarly. And it's like, I mean, again, these are body count kills to me, and they are gruesome, and I guess for gore hounds it's great, but I'm like, why is this in the movie?
I don't know. I kind of I'm okay with the strip club scene, I think. I can see your argument, Dave, but especially because of that scene of the mom there, like, it ties it all together, because the journey of Michael being led by his mom, so to speak, is a really central part of the story. And I can see, like, if it was cut, I think the movie probably would have been fine. But I do think that actually does have some relevance, just because I think another thing that I read in a couple places is how Lynchian this movie feels, especially with relation to Twin Peaks. And I think that this otherworldly aspect is introduced at a very skillful, like, dosage, I would say, of, like, introducing these spirits or whatever. And I think putting that in there is, it does tie the story, like, it fits to me, unlike the other one where it's just like, okay, that is just like, there's nothing to the story.
He went out of his way to kill her seemingly for no reason, just like you said. It's like, I guess she's, like, tangentially related to Lori and that she's her friend, but they weren't even in the same area. Like, he went out of his way to kill her.
It's not like a earlier scene where something happens
where he's stalking them or something and he sees them together. No,
There's a couple things like that. So that happened. And then another thing that happened was it's this quick line where the mom is talking about Loomis and she's like, look at how he's profiting off of our misery or whatever. And that line I take a little issue with is because Michael doesn't go out of his way to kill Loomis. He doesn't try to kill Loomis or anything like that. So it's like, okay, well, why is this on
Michael's
your radar?
Mom, dream mom.
Yeah, dream mom.
Okay.
Real mom.
He's still out there, rich and famous, all because of our pain. I hope he's having fun.
Yeah, it's like another thing where it's like, okay, kind of introduces a little thing that's, I don't know, it's not as focused as it could be.
Yeah, it's not fleshed out, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, that felt a little afterthought-y. But to speak to that whole Lynchian thing of Michael, like, I think that was probably one thing that a lot of people butted up
against
when this
thing.
Movie came out, was the mom angle and the white horse and all that stuff. And honestly, like,
I think it's different and cool. I don't know.
I think it's different. I don't mind it. And honestly, like, you know, because Michael Myers never talks, he's all internal. You know what I mean? Like, whatever's going on with Michael is all in his head. We never get to see that. So
and that
to
seems
me,
to be what he's interested in.
Like, yeah, to me, that makes sense that, like, that would, you know, that's this crazy, that, you know, we're getting an insight into Michael Myers' thought process. And, you know, I didn't mind that as much. That again, it's taking a lot from Friday the 13th, I think. Mommy issues, all that stuff. That's fine, whatever. At least it's doing a different thing than the original
yeah,
Halloween.
Yeah, like, visually, it's kind of cool.
Visually, it's kind of cool. It's shot well. And
yeah, I mean, if you haven't seen it, because I don't think a lot of people saw this. Yeah, it's like a...
No, this was not nearly as successful as the first movie. In fact, I think this was kind of a bomb.
Yeah, like, throughout the movie, Michael's seeing visions, like, and they are kind of Lynchian Red Room kind of stuff of, like, his mom is like almost like this white ghost death figure almost kind of thing.
Well,
kind of leading
him
around.
The white horse thing is kind of introduced via retcon kind of like in the beginning. It opens up at the sanitarium and the mother's there and it happened to be one of the visits that I guess we just didn't see. And that's when this whole white horse thing is, it opens with more text, white horse. You know what I mean? It's an expression of rage or this or that and the other thing. And then I was also kind of glad that we didn't get the trick or treat, you know, like that. I don't know. That just seemed kind of like film school student-y kind of bullshit. Like, this is awesome. Like, I don't know. I'm kind of glad that we didn't get that. Although you could argue that that white horse text in the beginning is also very film student-y. But I didn't mind the David Lynchian stuff that much. Again, it's like it's a different thing. It allows you to get into Michael's head because he's all internal. He's well. He does vocalize in this movie where he didn't before. You know what I mean? And also, I think this may be a difference from the theatrical and the director's cut, Ryan, but Michael speaks at the end of the director's cut.
Yeah, he didn't speak in mine.
Yeah, from what I understand, the director's cut, again,
yeah,
like they reshot the ending.
Oh,
the ending is different, I think.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, he literally, him and Loomis crash, like, I guess we're jumping all the way to the end. They crash out of that shed or whatever, and Michael's mask is off, and he literally just, like, looks at Loomis, and he just says, "Die!" And then he just, like, stabs him and kills him.
Wow.
It was startling. But honestly, again, I don't mind that Michael spoke in the end of this movie,
it's
at
different.
Least in the director's cut. It's different. Make it different. You know what I mean? Do your own thing, which is why I appreciate this movie way more than the first one, because it's clearly, you know, aside from stealing from Friday the 13th, it's clearly doing its own thing. It's taking some influence from David Lynch, and I don't mind it. It's well shot. It's well edited. I thought it was the director's cut. I'm going to go on record. I like this movie.
That's funny. It's a surprise.
Yeah, it surprised me too.
Yeah. Yeah, they I like I said, that's my favorite stuff is like, oh wow, this movie looks different than a usual slasher, I think.
It's gorier than your average slasher.
It's gorier, which is not it's hard to watch, but at least like it just has like this like it it looks better and I think this is more realized. I think most of the time I still don't think I like the Laurie actress. I still don't think I think she does a great job of the split. I know that they're going for like this kind of split thing of like trauma and her kind of like dealing with it in different ways, but I still don't find it. She just comes off like weird to me. There's something off about it. And maybe that's the point. I don't know. But the one thing that's my positives. I'm curious if on the director's cut, what's her friend's name? Allie? Is that what it is?
Annie.
If there's more with her, because it feels like she's like disappeared from the movie in the in the theatrical cut.
Really?
It is like in the beginning and the end, basically. Like,
oh, I don't, she pops up here and there. Like, they keep fighting, and she's just, you know, and they're to a point where Lori almost wants to just, like, she like confides in Margot Kidder, her therapist. Like, sometimes I just want to, you know, and the therapist is like, complete that thought. She never does. Oh. The suggestion is, like, is she so, like, you know, fucked up now that she wants to kill Annie? Because she says to her therapist, like, every time I see her, it just reminds me of that night. You know what I mean?
I don't remember that. Maybe I missed that.
Oh, wow. It seems like we got more Annie.
Yeah, I had the Margot Kidder scene, but I don't remember that dialogue. But maybe I'm misremembering.
Yeah, I feel like Annie is a big presence, and that's why her
death
is...
Well, that's why I felt it when she died.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I think you get a number of arguments between Annie and Lori throughout the movie as it builds, and you have, and it that's what also allows the, I don't know what you want to call it, the white horse to build within Lori. She kind of starts to get flashes of Michael, both through physical connection, like when he eats the dog meat, and then also with kind of trying to relive the memory of from the first movie where he taped the guy, and the she's stepdad. Taping Lori or Annie to the sofa chair, and puts on the mask and everything. That kind of relives the memory. Basically.
I guess I did see. I remember that. I saw that, but I don't remember her like spewing out loud. I don't know. Yeah, I just
did
I felt
you
like
see like there was there's especially one fight or there's two fights actually where they're kind of cursing at each other and stuff like that.
Get out of my room.
That's the last one, yeah.
I don't remember that. Maybe I'm wrong. I might be wrong. Maybe I'm misremembering, but that was something I don't remember.
Well, I think we did you dirty then, Ryan, forcing you to watch the theatrical cut.
I'm looking.
It sounds
through.
Like the director's cut's even better.
I mean, aside from like a couple scenes like that, like what we talked about already, like the unnecessary kill, most of the scenes are pretty like tight. I think there are some like logistical issues I have with this issue or this movie. Like, I think the biggest offender is how quickly Loomis gets from his his hotel to the crime scene at the shack at the end.
Was it like right across the street?
I know that's so that was like silly to me.
Because there's no suggestion that like, you know, it's hours later or something like that, or an hour later. It looks like he immediately like teleported there at the end.
Yeah, the way that whole thing unfolds is just like all instantaneous.
Before we get more in depth on the ending of the movie, let's talk about one of the big things about this movie that we haven't discussed yet. You brought his name up just now, Dr. Sam Loomis, author extraordinaire, number one bestseller, here at your service. I'm essentially a completely different character in this movie. That was the most shocking thing about this movie. I vaguely remember that Loomis basically became an asshole in Halloween 2-2, but I forgot the extent of his assholery. There is a line in this movie when he is like yelling at his secretary. He's all obsessed about his image now. And when he literally says, like, you know, if I want your opinion, I'll beat it out of you. I'm like, Jesus. Like, he is flat out a completely different character in this movie. Like, I feel like in the first movie, yes, he wrote a book, but it had a more academic spin to it. It wasn't him like, you know, it wasn't him like obsessing over the cover. Like, no, I need to look like this. Like, the crowdsourcing says they want me in the iconic tan jumpsuit or, you know, tan jacket or whatever. Like, I hate it. Like, he's like, you know, yelling at people, like yelling at his assistant. He's essentially a different character, which initially I bumped up against, but as the movie went on, it became so crazy and turned up to 11 that I kind of just embraced it. And like, I had a thought where I'm like, Malcolm McDowell must have had a good time in this performance.
Excuse me, my dear. It won't be 1 second. What?
Okay, I am all for selling books, all right? God knows I've done some things that I'm not proud of. This is disgusting. I did not agree to this backdrop. I mean, what's next? Heading over to the cemetery and dancing on the victims' graves?
Look, I don't think you quite understand what I'm trying to accomplish here.
Well, fair enough. I don't. Please explain it to me. I would really like to understand.
I'm selling the sizzle, not the steak.
The sizzle?
Yes.
The sizzle.
Mm-hmm.
It's bad taste is what it is, okay? And it's just going to add fuel to the lynch mob fire.
Bad taste? Bad taste? God, it's business, woman! Business! Besides,
bad taste is the petrol that drives the American dream.
Well, I think it's a mistake.
Oh, yeah, you do, do you?
Yes.
Well, when I want your opinion, I'll beat it out of you. Here, now take that and go sit in the car. Go on, get your ass in there.
Yeah, I think him, like, we're talking about, like, things that are different. It is kind of like a switch, because he does seem in that first movie pretty, like trying to help this kid, at least, you know, even though he's part of his demise. Yeah, concerned.
Yeah.
He's, even though he's part of his transformation.
But, and he feels like, you know, kind of guilty about some things. Yeah. Like, maybe I failed Michael and this is my fault.
And but I do appreciate, like, instead of trying to make, like, a new character, like, it's dealing with, like, the whole true crime type of, even though this is, like, early before that, almost, like, before the podcast, it's kind of, like, going into that idea of the true crime sort of mommy murder porn stuff, you know? So it's, I like it. I mean, it's like, it's a turn for Loomis. Maybe it could have been a different character, but it's just, like, why just... Let's just use the characters on the board instead of...
Let me make this sparkling clear. I am the same character from the first movie.
Okay, so I've been thinking a lot about the Loomis character, because as Dave rightly noted, it is a drastically different character. But I'm very appreciative of it. I don't think it's a perfect execution, but the thing, again, to remember is that Loomis also went through an encounter with Michael Myers while he was about to murder him. So he also experienced trauma. So he's going to respond in a different way. Is he responding in the right way? No. A healthy way? No. But he is responding in his own way.
I'm alive, motherfuckers! Now I'm going to make the money!
Exactly. This is a character that is has kind of like... bottomed out like spiritually in his own, within his self, and he's all about money now. This is like he's living like a life that doesn't matter anymore, through his own way, and he just has an avenue of fame, and it's just like it actually like feels very appropriate for this kind of fame generation and like what that kind of person is. And it's a very, like, Loomis is a very shallow person, which is why, again, the ending I have such a kind of, like, I go back and forth on, but the transformation and the radical difference of Loomis, I actually really appreciate. And I think the other thing to note is that we have kind of, like, a switch in the, like, thematics of obsession. So in the previous series, Loomis was obsessed with catching Michael, but I think here... the switch has happened where Laurie is the one that is quote unquote obsessed and overwhelmed and overburdened by the memory of Michael. Yeah. Exactly. And so if Laurie is serving that thematic beat point, then Loomis needs to do something different. And so I think like, you know, I don't think that this is ripping off Friday the 13th that much other than like some character attributes, but there's a lot of stuff in this movie that I feel like is taking from other movies, like a lot of Texas Chainsaw. Yeah. And then
imagery like that, like the house that Annie and Laurie live in, like that looked like the Texas Chainsaw house.
Well, it's funny because Dave said that to me. He said like, that looks like the Texas Chainsaw house. I'm like, yeah, it does. And then they do the scene where they grab the girl like Leatherface does. And I was like, oh, okay, you're right.
They even have what's her face? I forget her name, but the main star from Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2. She's in this. She's like a nurse.
Yeah. And I think, and then regards to Loomis and like the kind of true crime stuff, like that ties similar to like the Hannibal series. Mm. There's a Freddie Lowndes character that's kind of like this tabloid character. So, I mean, these kind of attributes are like, there's precedence for them. And like I said, I think that the main reason we need Loomis to go off in this crazy direction is because we already have Laurie doing this introspective obsession stuff.
It would just be repetitive, but I think it would have like went down a little easier if we would have had a few more scenes of doubt within Loomis, like, am I doing the right thing? Because it just turns on a dime. Like he's in it. Like he has a bad interview with, of all people, Chris Hardwick, which probably dates this movie the
hardest.
And Weird
Al is in there too.
And Weird Al is there. He goes on the show and he gets ribbed and he doesn't like it. And that's seriously like seemingly the only real scene of introspection, because he's faced with these things a couple times throughout the movie, like at appearances, at book appearances. They're like, do you feel any guilt at all for, you know, Michael's behavior, this or that? And then there's the scene at the book signing where the dad of Linda from the first movie is like, you killed my daughter. He's like, no, I didn't. And but it's just like, it seems like on paper those things would be enough, but you never see Loomis like really grappling with the with all of that until this turn on a dime scene in his hotel room when he happens to notice the, you know, breaking news. Oh, like Michael Myers and Laurie Strode are like holed up in this shed or whatever, and that's the cops are surrounding them, and he's just like, oh my God. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. It would have been nice if it had had him really being more introspective and dealing with these things throughout the movie as opposed to on a dime, like, I'm my old self again. You know?
I 100% agree, Dave. I think it needed just one.
Luckily,
scene.
I'm after, right across the street from the crime scene.
After Loomis gets a gun pulled on him, just show Loomis in the bathroom looking at himself in the mirror.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Like, only like that one would probably do
one, it. One little thing, because you're absolutely. That's why I like. I go back and forth on the ending with Loomis. I'm like, we saw nothing that's in this movie that suggested, oh, I'm going to do the right thing now. Because he's basically going to sacrifice himself, which
yes.
he does, you know?
Let and me I'm do like, one okay. thing right, Sheriff.
And all, and like, there's nothing that happened in the movie to suggest that he would ever do that again. Like, it's just, so yeah, it's totally, I think we need something there. So Loomis's ending, he didn't earn. Because I made a joke. You didn't see, I don't think you saw this part, this version of the ending, Ryan, but like Loomis, like basically just breaks through the police, like somehow he sneaks past all these police, and he goes to the shack and he's like gonna go and he's like, I need to do this, Sheriff. And I'm like, I need a redemption arc, Sheriff.
Yes.
That's funny. Yeah. So I like that stuff, but you're right. It could have just used a tiny moment. There's a couple characters I feel like would make this really sing this movie. I think. I'm looking at the differences, and everything. A lot of the stuff you guys are talking about with Annie is like not in the cut I saw. Basically,
oh bummer.
Like she only has one scene with Margot Kidder in mine, and it's really funny.
Oh wow,
it's really funny reading one of the things on. It says scenes in theatrical cut, not in unrated cut, and it's really small compared to the unrated. And this one's really funny, as it says, instead of going to her psychiatrist once again, Laurie stops to play with a pig on her way into work.
She mentions
the pig in the director's cut.
The pig's
the director's
there.
Pig, cut, and I wanted to grab it.
Well, that actually, it sucks if you. Oh, Ryan. Okay, next year you should watch Halloween 2, the director's cut. Because even that scene is better in the director's cut, because it's actually a memory that Laurie talks about. Mm. But when she talks about it, she's very frantic and she's basically having a breakdown. She's like, I went to the park and I held a pig and the lady said the pig liked me.
Well,
and
this is a big freakout scene that's important, because she's like, just give me some fucking pills. Yeah. Like, I need pills. I can't deal with this without pills.
Yeah. So, and that's one of the scenes actually I think is a better scene with Laurie. So you had a little issue with Laurie.
Yeah. She kind of like, from my thing with her is she comes off like, you don't have these almost bipolar things going on with her in my version. I watch it.
You got robbed, dude.
It's almost like you feel like
liked her more.
You got Rob Zombie, man.
You got Rob Zombie.
It's almost like in the cut I saw, it's like she's just like, it seems like a kid putting on like a show, like a vibe, you know, or something. Like,
she's so tragic, and in my opinion, she's a very tragic character.
Like, honestly, to speak to that, you know, because that gets brought up a lot with these types of movies. It's almost like a buzzword. Like, this movie's about trauma. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? It's about trauma and it's about family. Like, this movie does deal with that, but honestly, I thought, at least speaking to the director's cut, that it did a good job of dealing with trauma. And also, like, there's the question of, like, you know, is this built into her? Is this genetic? Like, did she inherit this mental illness from her family and stuff? Like, it deals with those things. And again, like, at least in the director's cut, there is a lot of time spent with Laurie. And I'm like, that's how you approach a movie like this, a sequel to Halloween, is just like, how would this event fuck you up mentally?
It's sort
you
know of what
and she is just a broken person in this movie. And I kind of like the ending of the movie. The ending that we get anyway in the director's cut is Michael, you know, his mask is off outside the shed. He stabs Loomis. He tells him, die. And then the cops shoot down Michael. He's dead. Laurie walks out. She picks up a knife.
Sword.
Not a knife. A flat-out sword at the end of this movie. It's more of a sword and less of a knife. But she walks over to Loomis, and there's like an ambiguous moment where, like, is she going to kill Loomis? And all the cops are sort of in a standstill. And Sheriff Brackett's like, Laurie, like, put down the giant sword. And then one of the cops gets a little trigger happy and just shoots her. She's dead. She flies back.
Yep, not in my version.
wow, because our version's way different. Like, it, again, it's that ambiguous thing, like, is she crazy or not? But that one cop shoots her before Brackett could be like, don't shoot, don't shoot. It pauses mid-flat, like she's in, like, falling backward. It dissolves. She's in a mental institution. You're not exactly sure. And according to Rob Zombie in the commentary, he said in the director's cut, all three of them died. Mm-hmm. Michael Myers, Laurie Strode, Dr. Loomis, they all died. And this vision that we're seeing at the end of her in this mental institution is just like her last thought before she dies. They are all dead. But yeah. That's not what happened, is it?
One more thing.
But you didn't go with that ending, did you, Rob?
Mine feels like it's more like it's more like a Psycho ending a little bit, where she she comes out, she stabs Michael and kills Michael repeatedly. And I think at this point Loomis is already dead.
Michael killed Loomis.
Yeah. And then she comes out wearing Michael's mask out of the shed.
Oh, wow.
And then she's like, and then they're like, you know, hands up, hands up, kind of thing. Well, that's what I thought was cool too. Is like, so it's like, I think that's when the song comes out. But she comes out. They all act like they're gonna shoot her, but she takes off the mask and drops the knife, kind of thing. And then it fades to the hospital scene, and then it kind of does a slow pan with the music to her face, and then she sees like the mom and stuff. But
Bates smile.
Yeah.
From what I read, the hallway sanitarium smiling scene, psycho scene, that's in both cuts, but it's everything that happens before. But I was curious, Ryan, in your cut in the shack, did you get any imagery of the mom and little Michael?
Mm-hmm. That's all there.
Okay,
too.
At least it has that, because I think that's important. Mm-hmm. That at the end you get all of them together. And another thing I actually liked was at first, like when you get these shots of the family, like you have like white light and stuff like that, and it's actually a helicopter. Like I like that. Mm-hmm. It kind of blurs the line between what's real and what's not, and you kind of get these like.
And again, like I also liked because there's a moment in this movie when it's revealed, you know, Loomis's book comes out. It's going to be a real humdinger. There's going to be some spoiler alerts in my book. And I didn't realize this, but this is the moment in the movie, like, you know, 2/3 of the way through, that Laurie realizes that she is Michael Myers' sister.
She reads the book, whatever.
I kind of took that for granted. I just assumed that they would have told her that, or she would have found that out at the end of the first movie, but she doesn't. It's only revealed when Loomis's book comes out. You know, he puts this juicy detail in there to sell more copies. And this just, you know, drives Laurie even more crazy to the point. And I like this part in the end in the shack when she sees, like, you know, she could see like her real mother there, and she sees young Michael, and she's like, she feels like she's being held down, and it cuts to Loomis, who's in the shack as well. He's like, there's nobody there. What are you talking about? It's all in your mind. You know what I mean? I thought that stuff was kind of cool. Like, she's just fully gone off the deep end. She's, you know, she's seeing what Michael's seeing. And I enjoyed that stuff personally.
Yeah.
I liked it too.
Yeah. It's
you just see her like convulsing on the ground, and Loomis is just sort of like, what the hell? He's like, it's not real. It's in your mind.
It's weird because I feel like people would even feel, I mean, I guess that first movie did out pretty good, but like this movie, if somehow was the one that came out first, would done a lot better, and people would have been into it maybe, or not into it, but more interested. Like, because that using that, like saving the damn theme until that ending was like, I was like, wow, like what a, that is like so cool. Like, I don't know. It was so great. Like compared to like the weird part it pops in the first one where it's like him, the kid,
superhero moment.
Yeah. Superhero changing moment, you know, kind of thing.
As much as it sounds like the conflict behind the scenes was worse in the second one, it's still clear that Rob Zombie had so much more control over the story and what he was able to do.
That way, yeah.
And so I think you make an interesting point, is like, okay, if this had just come out without the first one, what would the reception have been?
It'd probably been like one of those like split down the middle things, yeah, where people were like, that was fucking sick, or I hated that. Like, so, you know.
Yeah.
Instead,
that would have been the same. Just, yeah, I bet more people would have saw it though, initially, at least. I don't know what the view count is these days.
Well,
but
you mentioned the theme. They bring back Love Hurts. They bring a different rendition, Ryan, of Love Hurts when all three of them are like dead.
Yeah,
like,
I don't think that's
cameras panning. Oh, you didn't see that?
No.
Oh, wow. Well,
because
no.
that, remember, Dave, that happens when Laurie got shot, and it's just, it's a like a slow pan over her body.
Yeah.
With like a spotlight on her body. And so Ryan didn't get a scene of her dying. So
Mm-mm. Yeah,
he doesn't get to see that.
Yeah, it says that the ending, of course, is different. Laurie stabs Michael repeatedly, emerging from the cabin wearing Michael's mask. Then the scene fades to Laurie in the white room. And there's a white horse, and a slower version of Laurie's theme plays on the soundtrack. So,
Okay, so I have something that I really want to bring up. So first, Ryan, when do you know if the Annie death sequence and when they find her body was the same? Like, did you see the video?
They didn't have the video. That's not in the direct. That's not in the theatrical.
Wait,
there's not the video. There's not the flashbacks of the video footage. It's just, it's not in there.
That's, you didn't see that?
No, no.
You didn't even see a good movie. You didn't see even a movie.
What the? Like I said,
it did help those because it's like real VHS footage of the actor, like young for real.
And that is I almost cried.
You didn't see
in
the
Halloween movie.
Wow.
Like that. Oh my, I'm shook.
I'm telling you, all the stuff with Annie is like peeled out of that theatrical.
That's a
version.
Bummer.
Oh my God, dude.
Did
Annie die?
She dies, and it's like in the bathroom, and the dad shows up and stuff. But it, to me, that's, I think this is when I'm kind of losing steam in the movie because it's just I'm kind of like, I haven't seen Annie for so long, and we're kind of like sitting around.
Yeah, you got robbed, zombied.
That's when the movie like actually steps on your face.
Yeah,
and
it killed
you. Like, oh my God. Well, okay.
Like
so
I said, I was in the movie until basically, and then until the end, basically.
Sell it because we haven't mentioned him yet, but Brad Dourif in this movie.
Good.
I like Brad Dourif in this movie. He's allowed to be a normal dad. You know, he's making dad jokes. He's like, oh, you've never seen Cat Ballou, Lee Marvin? Oh man, you're making me feel old. And he's like, it's kind of an interesting contrast. It's Laurie, Annie, and Sheriff Brackett at the dinner table. They're eating pizza, and Annie, this whole thing, like, no meat, Dad. You're getting the wrong, you know, type of pizza. Blah blah blah. And they cut back between like Mike, Laurie's dad eating like the pizza. He's making like a joke, like,
here,
and it cuts to Michael eating like this like animal or something, you know. Like, I just thought it was interesting that juxtaposition, but I like that they showed the home life, like, you know, the differences between Laurie and Michael, and then suddenly it catches up and Laurie has that moment where that weird psychic moment that kind of doesn't really come back until the very end, I suppose, when suddenly she tastes what Michael is tasting. Like, I thought that was a little unusual, and the movie doesn't seem to enter that realm again where they're psychically linked, like physically.
I think the psychic component is all comprising of like the mom images when she's held down.
Images. Like she's seeing what Michael's seeing, but like the fact that like Michael can eat like, you know, raw meat and then she tastes it in her mouth. Like, I mean that like type of connection.
Well, yeah, that's the only kind of instance of that. But I do think like when in the barn scene, when, you know, she's struggling against nothing, it's a similar like manifestation of her experiencing something internally that no one else can see or anything like that.
Yeah. But yeah, like I love Brad Dourif in this movie, and that moment when Annie when he walks in on the like blood splattered bathroom and they allow the camera just to sit on him and he's like, no, like it kind of reminded me a little bit of that scene in Hereditary when you see, I forget her name. Help me out here. I'm blanking on her name.
Toni Collette.
When Tony, yes, it reminded me of when Toni Collette is grieving and it's just that prolonged shot of her like, no, you know what I mean? Like I felt it from Brad Dourif, and it's a bummer, Ryan, that you missed the in between the flashback scenes and all the other Annie scenes, because like Nick said, I actually felt it when Annie died.
Sucks.
I couldn't believe it.
I mean,
yeah,
it's to me, it's
the part, biggest
time,
part of the
like,
movie. Yeah,
it's like a great, it's one of the all time great moments in horror cinema.
Wow,
like,
really?
Because it's unrivaled. Like, what other horror movie can you think of? Like, I guess Hereditary might be a decent example that taps into loss and grief the way this that scene does. Like, it is so brilliant to me. But I do have a question, and it's something that does undermine the scene for me. And actually, like, I really, well, actually, I have a question. Ryan, did you see Annie's body in the bathroom?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So when Laurie finds Annie, Annie is naked.
Mm-hmm.
So But when Michael attacked Annie, which also the initial attack, oh my God, that scene is so great. Like the editing, the way it kind of fades away and cuts to another scene.
You don't see the whole thing happen. You just see the lead up. Yeah.
But we hear the attack. It's so, oh my God, it's so good. But when Annie gets attacked, she's wearing clothes. So why is Annie naked when they find her in the bathroom?
If I remember correctly, she has a robe.
I didn't remember she was.
Like a robe on, maybe?
Yeah, she had like a robe on. She was like in the bathroom.
Is that maybe?
Well, it's such a change to me, like, because I don't think Michael would rape her. So, like, he's just violence guy. So
he's violence guy.
I'm like, it makes my eyebrows raise because I'm like, why? Again, it's just a little thing that creates an inconsistency to me. And it also is like, it's that kind of thing that I catch more nowadays. It's like the male gaze and what the camera is doing, how it wants us to look at things.
Well, if I remember correctly, like the first time she gets, or the time she gets attacked in the first movie, like you also see her like topless.
Well, it made sense in the last one because she was naked in the last one, like when she was attacked. So there's that consistency. So it's like in the strip club, the girl.
She was having sex with her boyfriend.
Yeah. So it made sense because she was already naked. Like at least narratively, they explained it. But this one specifically, I could be misremembering, like maybe she was naked, but I believe she was wearing something. So if it was a robe, okay, it kind of makes sense. But nonetheless, like it stood out to me and I'm like, again, it's one of those things that's like where, because to me, this movie wants to be serious. It wants to be taken serious. It's doing these elevated things, in my opinion. When it does something like this, it feels cheap. It feels undermining. It feels inconsistent.
It feels like a Weinstein note.
It does. Exactly. I was like, oh, there's Harvey.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm looking at it right now. I mean, I don't know if this is the one. This may be the my scene, the theatrical version. But it kind of looks like she is like in the bathroom in a robe. And maybe it gets taken off or something in the struggle. Because it is, you're right that it is like the editing is not showing it. It's just kind of flashing back and forth kind of thing.
Right. And I mean, at the same time, I guess because I absolutely adore and love the cut between Annie being attacked and we hearing it and not seeing it. Like that is so powerful to me.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't take that away. So I guess I'm willing to go along with it if she's wearing a robe and stuff like that, but it just stands out to me as a thing that's like, okay, they could, I mean, but granted she wouldn't be as bloody if she had a robe on, but
I mean, this sounds freaking trashy, but haven't you said before, David, there's a good naked and bad naked, but this is bad naked. So maybe it's not.
Yeah.
Oh, it just goes along with like, there's good kills and bad kills. These are all bad kills. Bad
well, naked scene. To speak to good kills, I and Rob Zombie has said that he was not a fan of Halloween 2.0. He didn't really care for the original Halloween 2, and he wasn't intending to make an homage to the original Halloween 2 with the whole hospital sequence.
There's a little bit in the beginning. He didn't want to do that.
Apparently he said it wasn't his intention to make an homage to Halloween 2 with the hospital stuff in the beginning. But I gotta say, honestly, the first act of this movie leading up to when she wakes up from the nightmare of all the hospital stuff, I think it's really, really good.
I think that's really affecting shit, I think.
Very good. Like, and much like the original Halloween 1 into Halloween 2, it opens, putting aside the flashback sequence, the retcon with the white horse. After that, it cuts to Lori, and I love this, that she's just walking in the middle of the street, traumatized. I think she has, like, the bloody knife or gun. She has the gun.
Yeah.
And she's walking, and Sheriff Brackett pulls up next to her, and he realizes, like, oh, God, some shit went down. And then it cuts to her, like, being rushed to the hospital. And this, again, to speak to the gore in this movie is so gnarly, like, the clinical edge that there is to it in this scene when they're just, like, cutting, like, when they're sewing her up and all this stuff and, you know, patching her up and all that. And this entire sequence of her in the hospital, it slowly, you mentioned Lynch, it gets a little Lynchian and Twilight Zone-y when suddenly like the hospital is seemingly empty. And then that one nurse pops in and she's dead. She has her throat slit or whatever. And we proceed to have this somewhat elongated sequence of her getting chased by Michael in the hospital. It spills out into like the parking lot and the little toll booth. I thought it was all really well done and like suspenseful. And there was even a moment when she's like, having to like, you know,
mountaineer outside the hospital when, like, in her like boot, and there's, and she falls into what looks like a corpse disposal junk trash can or something. Like, this is when it becomes nightmarish, and if you're unsure if it's a dream, this is maybe a little hint that there's just this giant body, you know, corpse drop-off zone outside the hospital. She falls into it. It's nightmarish, and it's, I really like that scene of her being trapped in the toll booth or the guard, you know, the parking lot station or whatever. Like, it was really effective and well shot. Like, there's some shots like with the rain and everything that I'm like, this is like light years ahead of the previous movie, in my opinion, visually speaking.
So many good shots, in my opinion. The rain shot of this long, like, empty parking lot with just the rain falling in the foreground. And then that same shot with Michael just kind of in the background or whatever in the far away. And then there's also that really amazing shot. I think I even said it to you, Dave. It's like when she's running through the forest, and it's got the light just glaring at us, and she's running towards us.
Well, there's also a really cool shot, like Michael's journey back to Haddonfield. I guess he's just been like, you know, chilling out, you know, maybe 100 miles away in the forest or something. As
he's like living his Bigfoot out there.
Living as Bigfoot, basically. And there's a really cool shot when he's walking, and it does like this crossfade, and there's a big side of like entering Haddonfield.
Really cool.
And it's just him walking through like the faded shot.
That
of
feels
sign,
like something like an old movie, like an old, like 70s or. I don't think that's in Texas Chainsaw, but just like that kind of thing, you know?
Well, there
it
is
was
a
well
moment,
done.
David mentioned the toll booth shot at the hospital scene. And that whole moment, Dave and I were saying, this is like real Texas Chainsaw vibes when she goes in there and she's chatting
to
the guard.
It was straight up like, it felt lifted. This felt very much homage-y. It was the moment, if you can think back to Texas Chainsaw Massacre and combine the two things, it's the moment from that movie when like she's running away from the killer, you know, Leatherface, and she runs into, in that movie, a gas station. And the door is left open, and she's "No, he's coming!" And the guy's like, "No, it's gonna be all right." It's the same thing here. That it's just, you know, the toll booth guy, like, "It's gonna be all right," and he leaves, and the door is still open. You know, Michael's still out there. Like the shot, the way it's shot is almost exactly the same.
It is very like it has to be intentional.
It has to be. Yeah,
the way it's reflecting that scene.
And the uncertainty, where it almost like a nightmare. She's like, "This is crazy!" Like he's right outside. The door is open. I'm just sitting here, and this guy keeps telling me it's going to be okay, and he leaves. Like, and that moment when it just, the camera sits with her for a moment, and she's just sitting there in this little booth.
You know, I think this is where I would kind of, film theory-ish, is like where I would say Rob Zombie diverges from Texas Chainsaw, because, and goes to the kind of grievousness and tragedy and trauma and victims' names and stuff like that, is because this security guard, whomever he is,
Buddy.
He says his name. He says, "My name is Buddy."
Yeah,
and I think that's a very small thing that gives a name to the face. That's a little tiny breadcrumb that just adds like a total new dimension to the movie. Is like, "Oh my god, I know the name of this character who died." Like that.
Well, Lori even says it. She's like, "Buddy,
yeah,
you're my buddy, buddy."
Yeah, I love that. And then I love the shot of Michael like looking through that like grated door. Just cold. Like that, the movie opens, this dream sequence is so cold. Michael is so, I really, really like you say, he went Jason-esque, which is fine, but I actually really like it. I think it brings such a weight and heft.
Isn't like Octavia Spencer there too? Is one of the nurses?
She was the nurse that gets killed. Yeah,
that was gnarly too. How she comes walking in like she's been stabbed and kind of in shock, you know, kind of thing.
And one thing I will say to the identity of Michael Myers, I think that this movie, like, kind of iconicized his kill style with that downward jabbing slashing thing. Like he does it so many times in this movie, and with such ferocity. It's like,
well, especially with the nurse, like he just keeps stabbing her, and it's uncomfortable.
I flinch like internally every time like you see him jab with that knife, because it's so, and then it makes sense. Like then all of a sudden like the poster makes sense, because that's what he's doing in the poster. But
well, and they also add in the you know, it's just like, and it's also interesting that there are several moments in this movie when he has his mask off. He's just bearded, you know, a caveman or a Bigfoot. But there's a moment in the movie,
Hagrid.
Like,
when I already said that.
When he's Hagrid. Yeah, there's a moment when he kills these two guys. I guess he's been stealing food off their farm or whatever. And he puts his mask on in order to kill them. I thought that was kind of interesting, too.
Yeah, when he dons the mask in the headlights.
Yes, that was a cool shot.
It was a superhero moment, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
It was.
But it didn't have, like, the, you know, theme song going. They had their own thing going. A little bit.
Yeah, and then they have the... I thought it was especially brutal when he impaled that guy on the antlers. I knew that was coming because the antlers are on the truck, and so you're kind of waiting for it. So it's like, is this that? So I guess that's kind of like a body count thing, but... I like that one.
Yeah, yeah. That first chunk, I was like... And I really think you guys had... You definitely saw a different movie, because, like, the stuff that keeps you engaged is all the stuff that you guys that weren't stuff I saw throughout the rest of the movie.
This is eerily reminiscent of when Mike, Dave, and I watched Alucarda. Dave watched YouTube version, and like it had like 15 minutes of cut. And
I watched the heavily edited for TV version.
I feel so bad for you, Ryan, because like if you like even thought that the movie was like okay or decent, like but you saw something that was like, from what I heard, is massacred.
Damn, that sucks.
Well, I have added the Halloween 2 unrated version to the store's. I call it Fan Dave Go at home.
Yeah. I don't.
It is there if you want to watch it, Ryan. You have to be an employee of Apocalypse Video.
I'll watch it next year. You know,
if you're for those listening, it's exclusive access for Apocalypse Video employees. But it is available. You can buy it. It's like Shout Factory has it, so it's out there. You can get it. Or I should say, you should come into our store and rent it.
Yeah, I think you know. Now that we've been doing this series, we're almost done. Actually, I really think like. There's only, so far at least, I don't know about the next three. I don't think I've heard very much good things, but really these, I think, well, I guess consequently I'd have to do Rob Zombie's Halloween 1 too, but there's only four of these really that I think I would keep revisiting. So the first one, the third one, this one, and then Halloween 2, Rob Zombie's Halloween 2.1? No, 1.2.
That's how you're like ranking them?
Well, actually, if I rank them, Halloween 2, this one is going to be the second best.
Wow.
I think the first one is my favorite, but I would go as far as saying that this Halloween 2, Rob Zombie's Halloween 2, does broach greatness. That's kind of my thing.
Oh, that's so cool.
The director's cut specifically.
Yeah, the director's cut specifically. Based on what Ryan said, do not watch that.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like there's nothing, like, I mean, I'm not usually, like if it's the difference between director's cut and extended cut, and that sounds like a director's cut, because like extended cuts, I'm like, get out of here. You don't. There's a reason why this theatrical existed, you know. But if it sounds like he had trouble, like what are some of the stories that he had issues with, Dave? With was it just bad? Like they just
wanted... Well, kind of the insistence of well, again, it's shocking. Like despite all the stories you read that he didn't want to come back for a sequel at all. But I'm not really sure what brought him back. It sounded like they were going to make it anyway. Maybe he's like, well, if it's going to get fucked up, at least I'll fuck it up. It seems like maybe that's sort of the attitude. But he had a horrible experience in the first one. They kept like second guessing him on every turn,
every choice.
Seemingly. But it's interesting that, as you said, Nick, that despite all sort of like studio interference and this, that, they didn't seem to have confidence in him, that Halloween 2 feels so singular. It's like a singular vision, no matter what version you watch. Mm-hmm. Like, it sounds like even with the theatrical cut, the stuff missing, and again, they had him redo the ending, you know, as a whole, the movie's, his vision is still there. Like, you know, the ending changed notwithstanding, like, overall, like, you saw more or less the same movie that we did, Ryan. Like,
yeah. It just sounds like
it didn't feel
it's the character, the
fleshing
out. It
didn't feel compromised like the first movie did.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really just my things with just Annie and Laurie still didn't feel as big as it should have been. And I think, but like all the visuals is there, all the things you're talking about with that. And the first half of the movie, I think, is really feeling really great. It's probably like, yeah, I'm guessing it's probably, it loses me, is probably around that party, the Halloween party, where I was kind of bored with it.
Well, I will definitely say, I'm not sure what version has what, but like, we didn't need to see that comedian's whole act. I'm sorry. That was just like,
comedian,
what was the point of that?
What
that whole, oh, that was another thing, that stood out as, again, as like just
more boobs.
Really? It's when they leave the party. If you remember, they came from their friend's house and then they go back to Annie's house from the party. It doesn't make sense to me why they would go back to Annie's
house.
Well,
that's where Lori lives too, isn't it?
Well, no, but Lori asks her like, "Hey, do you mind if I crash at your place? Because I just had a fight with Annie."
Yeah, because it's a reversal of what Lori already started doing, which I guess makes sense. She's drunk. She's like, "Oh, I'm just gonna go home or whatever."
Oh,
so.
Yeah, good point.
But again, they didn't have a line. I just narratively, it just like, why are you going there? And so
yeah.
But I do think that whole scene, actually, the Halloween night party club dance thing, it could have been handled a lot differently, because really it seemed like the only thing that we got out of that, to me, that was like narratively like building upon itself, is when Lori has the mini freak out when she's grabbed by the wolf guy or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's, you could have done something like, I'm not opposed to having that party scene, but it felt, that was very much a speed bump to me.
Mm. Yeah, agreed.
But yeah, it's good, and I am disappointed I didn't see the other one. I'm usually like, nah, I like to see the theatrical version, but it's like, it sounds like one that got fucked up somehow. But do you think they thought it was just too brutal that she died in the original cut or something?
The Weinsteins were like, well, first off, they're like, we want to make another one, so you can't kill her.
Oh, okay.
Which is kind of the main thing.
Yeah.
But it's like, funny. That was one of Rob Zombie's things. Like, I want to make... Well, that's why he killed Michael off in the first movie, so that there would not be a second one. He didn't want a sequel, which is why she blows his head off at the end, but then he comes back, I guess, only part of his mask. I guess Laurie's a bad shot. Got part of his head.
Dave, if you remember, this is another moment I'm like, Rob Zombie, you're kind of clever. When... Sheriff Brackett is at the dinner table with Lori, and they're at that dinner scene, and he's talking about Cat Ballou. He says this line, he's like,
I can't believe you guys haven't seen this. I was like playing this drunk, but he's like the greatest gun in the West. And at one point, he's like talking about being a gunslinger. Bam! And he misses the barn. Misses the barn completely.
He misses, and he says it like two or three times.
Oh, right.
And that's how we know Lori missed.
Mm. Okay. Well, they also have the thing like, they never found the body.
The idea that they need to say that, actually, because I don't think Michael's like superhuman, like where he could survive getting shot in the face. So they have to say she missed.
Yeah,
Well, I guess the ambulance accident does happen. That's not part of the nightmare that Laurie's having. That actually does happen, and Myers escapes, and they just assume he like died somewhere or whatever.
I like the idea that we actually like the ambulance sequence is part of the dream, and so something happened to the ambulance, but we don't actually, or the morgue truck or whatever, but we don't know what happened.
This is her her interpretation via dream or whatever.
Yeah,
what could have happened with that? Yeah.
I think that's a scary thing too to think about. It's like, okay, you think you shot this person, and then the body was never found. Like, that scene, like, that is scary to think about. Like,
you know what's kind of interesting? This is something I should have brought up earlier, was, like, a lot of those first Michael kills are, like, assholes, like, kind of thing.
Yeah.
Like, those guys are talking about, like, fucking dead bodies, and then you have, like, the rednecks.
Oh, I forgot about that.
Did you get a look at the naked chick? Man, she was F-I-N-E-5. she still looked fresh. I heard a story about a couple of meat wagon boys fucking corpses over in Essex. I ain't never had the urge till tonight.
Oh, whoa, hey, whoa, come on, Brackett even thinks he has you joking about that, and then you're out of here on your ass.
I wouldn't never do it.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, she still look good to me, nice old titties are hanging out.
Come on, that's disgusting, stop it now.
I got wood just ziplocking her up.
Stop, shut up, please.
That was one thing, like, I you know, aside from the Halloween party, like the Rob Zombiness of this movie was felt a little more restrained,
but still nasty. It was the right dosage, if that makes sense. I don't know.
No, I agree. Yeah, like it, you know, just a little bit, and yeah, and it's like that slasher thing where it's like they got to be deplorable characters so you don't mind when they die. Like that was one of the few things in this movie where it felt like it inched a little bit into like, you know, Hellbilly Deluxe.
Well, because like, you also have the people. Like basically harassing them in their field or whatever. And remember that too? There was that scene where there was like three people in a truck, kind of like, get off our property.
Gave you an all time ass kicking or something like that.
Yeah. And it's like, oh, they're probably not wrong that this guy's hanging out, this Bigfooting in their yard or whatever. But like, yeah, they do like,
get a few of those outside the store.
They do start kicking them around. But yeah, I don't know. You guys sound like you had a lot better last half of the movie, where my first half was just like, oof, this is good. Like, I was rolling high. But, yeah, I don't know. I think if I did see this when it came out, I probably would have still not liked it. I think I probably still had that, didn't have the openness for something like this, but...
Yeah, I think I was the same way. I think I was just too close-minded, you know, like I was and am a big Halloween fan, and you know, I didn't like that this went the direction it took at the time, but watching it now and being more open to it, I actually really enjoyed it. Like, I would say if we're giving Letterboxd ratings, I would give this a 3.5 stars. I enjoyed it. I don't think it approaches greatness territory. I wouldn't go that far, but I did have a good time watching it. I enjoyed it. And if we're comparing it to, you know, our time-tested McDonald's value meal, this is like a solid quarter pounder meal for me. I enjoyed it.
With cheese or no cheese?
With cheese.
Oh, okay. It's pretty good.
Yeah.
Not
all the fries are good. Some of them are a little crappy, but
like the fries we had, they're like an hour old.
Yeah, like the, you know, like the burger is good. The fries, you know, like, so it's not perfect, but like
maybe
the
like
meat of it was there.
Like the Coke is a little like it needs to be changed. The bag needs changed.
A little bit, yeah.
You know,
but overall, I was pleased with my combo. What about you, Nick? Where does this fall on your rating and McDonald's scale?
I think I have to retroactively adjust Halloween 1. So, because Halloween 1 would, because the best item is the double quarter pounder with cheese. So I guess that Halloween 1 is a double quarter pounder with cheese and a McFlurry.
okay. The original Halloween 1.
The original Halloween 1.1.
1.1.
Rob Zombie's Halloween 2 is a double quarter pounder with cheese. Wow.
Just the burger.
Just the burger.
Okay. And what would you give it for a Letterboxd rating?
Well, I think this is going to go. So for me, if something achieves kind of greatness, is how I say it, it would be 4.
Oh, 4 out of 5. You giving it a heart?
No, I don't do hearts very much, so. Even if I were doing hearts, I don't think I would give this a heart, because a heart would be like a kind of a personal connection. And I don't think like this is not part of my film canon. Like Halloween 2 is not all of a sudden like in my, you know, I'm not putting it on my Mount Rushmore yet.
But you think it's underappreciated gem, maybe, you know?
Yeah.
Well, I think this is a film that's coming around a lot on the radar of a lot of people. And I think people are giving a second looks like Dave. And I think so. That's what I'll say. Like, this is my first time watching it, so I'm certainly open to watching it again. And I might appreciate it a little bit more. I do think there are a couple things that stand out to me as like really glaring that bother me personally. But overall, there's enough, especially like the Annie death scene. And I think the gravity that they treat the townspeople and violence in general, I think there's a lot of maturity here, in my opinion.
Yeah, for being as gruesome as it is, you're right, it's treating it in a way that is like, this is gruesome, not gruesome for the sake of it or something, which is great. I don't know, like, I mean,
like, there was a movie Dave and I saw in the theater one time. It was a horror movie, you know, and you know, when kills happen, people cheer sometimes or laugh or clap or whatever, you know, and it's always this. I mean, sometimes that kind of like gives you a weird feeling or whatever, but it makes sense. Like that's part of movies. You know, it's manipulation. It's getting you to feel that stuff. But I think this movie is aware of that And with that awareness, it's taking an opposite turn. It's like, okay, we actually want you to feel bad. Like, you're not supposed to be, like, rooting for this.
Yeah, and that's kind of where the Loomis arc is kind of in there, too, for that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely, I mean, there's, those speed bumps, like you were saying, but it's definitely thought out a lot better for what it is, and shot and edited a lot better, too, I think.
Yeah, agreed.
It looks, none of the other ones, and it's funny because you're talking about the Dave Gordon Green movies, like, are actually, I feel like they're maybe they're taking elements from these in a weird way. Cause,
a little bit.
And do you think we could ever come back around on those movies, do you think, if we came back around slightly on these, Dave? David.
Well, we'll talk about those. They're coming up. They're the last three episodes of this retrospective.
Because I think we like thought the first one was okay, and then it was...
I thought the first one was... Honestly, I thought the first David Gordon Green, when I saw it, was great. It had a few issues, but I overall thought the first one was great. Halloween... well, technically, that Halloween is a continuation of the first movie. So if you want to think about it, David Gordon Green's Halloween is technically Halloween 2...
3.
3.
And then maybe
think about it.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe that's how we used to say it. I don't remember. But it was that movie, but that has the idea of like podcasters like cashing in on this stuff.
True crime
stuff. And then there's kind of like, I don't want to spoil it for Nick, but like there's a little bit of like weird passing of the torch kind of stuff going on later, you know. I would say.
Also, I think I heard like at least the third, whatever happened in the third one, I think was the.
And which, and I'm, now that I'm thinking about it, I'm like, that is good. But then I'm also like, that movie, I didn't like it though at all. So I'm wondering what I can't even remember why. If, but maybe I'll wait to listen.
I actually turned around a little bit on Halloween Ends, but we'll talk about Halloween Ends in a few installments from now. but before we close out, and Ryan, we got to know McDonald's value menu rating. Halloween 2-2. Rob Zombie's Halloween 2-2.
Let's say, okay, what I usually like to get from McDonald's, I don't go often, but I'd like to get McDouble with no ketchup and mustard. No ketchup, no mustard. I usually get a spicy McChicken with no mayonnaise. And then usually what I'll do is maybe put like my own barbecue sauce on that or something like that. I'm not a big mayonnaise guy. But I would say that that's usually what I get. And I would say that's what this is, but they accidentally put mayonnaise on the, like they didn't take that on the, spicy McChicken. Maybe that's how I feel a little bit where I'm like, I'll eat this still. Like this is good. I get why you have this on here, but it just kind of, when there's too much, it grosses me out a little bit, you know?
Whereas if you watch the director's cut, that would essentially be the equivalent of you taking a knife and scraping off the mayo from your hot and spicy. Like, oh, it's a little like, better.
That's like Rob Zombie scraping off the Weinstein influence.
Like. Yeah, maybe that's what it is. Because I'm like, it's just there's too many globs. But if it had a small, like a light thing of mayonnaise, it'd be good. It's just, there's always too much. So I say just none, you know? So, but I could take a slight butter of mayonnaise is fine, you know?
That's funny. I also don't like mayonnaise.
It's fine if it's a little bit, gold. Just to wet it a little bit. But
you see, mayonnaise is white. It's basically all flavors. Where no mayonnaise is no flavor.
That's what I want. But
is plain, and plain is what we want.
Yeah.
Well, when the apocalypse video Halloween retrospective returns, we'll be in a new decade in 2018 with David Gordon Green's Halloween. 2-3? Halloween 2 version 3? We'll see you then, folks.
Trick or treat.
Let me make this perfectly clear. We will be back with David Gordon Green's Halloween. Let me make this sparkling clear. EEAD. Dead.
Look at this.
Are we analyzing
this? No, it's the wrong photograph. I mean, this is old Loomis. This is new.
Look. Old Loomis increases sales by 25%, okay? So.
Well, I'm not going in there until you go get me a cup of PG chips with a splash of milk, and I want it sizzling hot.